group that's local, and probably one of the reasons they're running here, get the local flame. I mean, he comes over.
Jasper's Pride.
He's going to run the Haskell.
Yeah, he's in the Haskell.
I knew he was running, so let's put the line through him there. But Book of Dan is quite a story in itself, right? Heading over to Saudi and running big there and come back and winning the Grade 1. And I know that was a big thrill for those guys, winning that Grade 1 there. And it was funny, I saw a little blurb in the paper not too long ago, and he was talking about the horse, and he goes, oh, you know, this horse, maybe he might be all right on the turf. Maybe I'm looking for a spot. So I immediately sent him the page for the Grade 1 at the Franklin at Kentucky Downs, going 6 furlongs on the turf. So I said, I got a spot for you.
Well, and I'm sure you've noticed that almost every conversation that we've had with Winning Connections, when asking about their, you know, if there's a hint of turf in their pedigree or on their page, everyone has said, well, we're going to, you know, we're looking at this, you know, I think it's called the, I think it's been changed to the National Derby, and I think it's now the, you know, very funny.
Since you brought it up, Kentucky Downs, I just got word yesterday that you had some bottom drawer, look in the bottom drawer, there's another $4 million there to add to the purses for the stakes. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stakes are getting moved up in money, and which means that there'll be a total of 15 races stakes worth $1 million or more, and of those 7 will be $2 million or more.
Unbelievable.
Yes. So that just came down, and so it'll be another.
So, the races that were in the hundreds of thousands, the high hundreds are going to $1 million?
Yeah, well, that is really. National Derby is going from 2.5 to 3.1.
Wait a minute. The Dueling Grounds Derby, now the National Derby, is going to be a $3 million race.
Yes.
Wow.
That's the deal. Wow. Got the sprints going to $1 million, the ladies marathon at 2.
Wow.
So it's
unbelievable.
It's a business. I mean, you only win 7 days, you got all that money, you only divide it up into 7, it comes up pretty good. So it's
the balloon keeps getting bigger. The balloon doesn't burst, it just keeps taking the basket higher and higher. This is like it's a runaway train.
It's just amazing, and you know, as we get closer, we'll talk about it. But you know, the beautiful part of that is it still is going to have the same, you know, country fair atmosphere. You want to say you want to come to the races, and whatever. You're sitting on a park bench, and you know what? They love it. Everybody loves that part, and I don't think that's going to change. We got the little chalet as a, you know, quote, clubhouse. But other than that, you know, people want to be outside and feel that.
No, it's casual and convivial, and looking forward to heading down on Labor Day and being there for the last 4 days of the meet. Let's get into what you encountered last night when the PPs came out. We've also got to talk about Del Mar. They drew the opening day card as well, and a little bit of a different format in terms of the Oceanside. Yes, Oceanside's being run opening day, but there's also the graded stake, so not the typical wading into the action. But let's start with the Haskell. Dornick draws another rail, and of course, drawing the rail in the Haskell is a little different than drawing the rail in the Derby. The Belmont winner and Louis Saez leave from inside, and you know they were going forward anyway, so all this means is they save plenty of ground. Jasper's Pride, as we learned in advance yesterday, that Chuck Spina was going to come out of the Jersey Shore in favor of running here, and he does inject, even though he's a closing sprinter, he's still a sprinter, and just his natural sprint speed should make him forward. The New Jersey bred for Prancing Horse, an Il Postino, unbelievable, and a horse that kind of found the stride in May when he came back to break his maiden as a three-year-old. And Chuck's had a very good meet with nine winners. Tuscan Sky, of course, got a win in Urin in the Pegasus. Javier Sticks comes back down to spend the Saturday at Monmouth. And Spendthrift, of course, the Sierra Farm Vino Rosso Colt out of the Sky Mesa mare, interestingly enough. Timberlake, of course, we talked to Brad Cox yesterday. If you're listening to the replay, you heard Brad the last 15, 20 minutes. And Windstar and Sienna's Into Mischief coming out of the Arkansas Derby. Most recently, the Rebel winner, the Champagne winner, and... interesting that comes back in a obviously in a tough spot. Fierceness is entered, but unless things go awry with Mind Frame, expect Fierceness to come out and run in the Jim Dandy next week. Just Step On It was a late addition. Lou Lindner comes in from Philly and gets Florent Giroux to ride. Florent on hand, so picks up a mount on this Accelerate Colt. New York bred, actually. Larry Goichman bred this one and sold him at OBS for just $23,000, and he's already made $121,000 for Brand Jam and David Clark. So coming in from Parks. And then Mind Frame. And Mind Frame, obviously, you know, even with the Belmont winner in here, Mind Frame, I don't know. I guess he goes favorite. Irad is down to ride, of course. Been with him since the start. You know, interesting that this race, I hadn't thought about this until now, because, of course, Mike Trombetta's major client, Larry Johnson, bred the Constitution Colt, $600,000 seller. He's a Maryland bred. C Streak, we talked to Eddie Owens. C Streak in here for Hollycrest, their home bred. And he's a Jersey bred. So you've got a Jersey bred, a Maryland bred, a New York bred. Actually, you got two Jersey breds because Jasper Pride. It's very unusual that there's fewer Kentucky breds in this field than there are regional breds. New York, Jersey, and Maryland well represented. So four of the seven starters elsewhere from Kentucky. But there's your field, and you know, I saw some people grousing. Really? Mind Frame, Timberlake, Door Knock, not enough for you, I guess? I'm a little surprised. Belmont runner-up and the Belmont winner, and Arkansas Derby Exeter and Rebel and Champagne winner. You know, yeah, multiple graded state winners.
That's great. Before I go, Thomas, I gotta preface my Kentucky Dancing. That's in need of approval. It needs to be rubber stamped. That's
by the Racing Commission
and all about. So we're hoping that gets done. So I don't want to be a little premature there, but I wanted to get that in. But no, this mom. I mean, this Haskell. You know, this is one of those situations with the Haskell and the Jim Dandy. It's been that way. Since I was here years ago, just, you know, they run close to each other. They're both, you know, the Haskell in itself is a destination race, of course, but it also serves as a prep for the Travers, as does obviously the Jim Dandy and the new, kind of new Curlin as well. And I know years and years and years ago, the higher up sat down with New York and tried to work something out with those two races, and there was close to a deal, and I can't remember what it was, and obviously never happened. But you know, I'm still hopeful in the future that maybe something could be worked out to where these races don't conflict as much. What can we say? So some of these horses are going to heading to the Jim Dandy. You can't say that's a bad move. You get a race over the track, and like Wayne says, he just wants to move, you know, run out of his own stall. But this is a fine race here. It's great. You get Mind Frame, like you said. Mind Frame's he's kind of maybe taken over as the most intriguing 3-year-old right now, right? With three starts, people want to see this horse run. I know I do. And you're right. Probably looking. I wasn't checking it that way, but I would probably think he'll be the favorite.
Yeah,
he's got the right style. I mean, you definitely want to be, you know, close to the lead here at some point, especially Turner for Home at Monmouth, if historically the track plays as it normally does. And this is a good bunch here. I mean, you got Timberlake, you know, when the Champagne is a two-year-old, ran okay in the Arkansas Derby, and Brad, as he does, I didn't hear him yesterday, but he just become very well at knowing when to come back and where to place his horses.
This may have been Nick. We'll talk to Nick Tamaro tomorrow. Nick made a suggestion yesterday that he was actually a little surprised that this is not from the typical Brad Cox 3-year-old playbook. He wondered aloud if Windstar and Sienna, you know, maybe plotted this along. And in terms of the odds, let me give you these. And of course, it's skewed, of course, by Fierceness's presence in the entry. But Mindframe 9-5, and then Dornick/Fierceness 5-2. But we keep having to reiterate the expectation that Fierceness awaits the Jim Dandy. Then you go to 9-2 on Tuscan Sky, and this was interesting. Tuscan Sky 9-2, and Timberlake 8-1. I think those two, I don't know if they flip-flop, but you know, certainly Timberlake has got a much more, you know, impressive resume coming into this than Tuscan Sky.
Probably the recency of the race over the track.
Yeah,
probably jumps out because he's, you know, Timberlake is coming off a bit of a layoff, but 8 does seem like a juicy number. For that quote.
And these will, you know, these will certainly change up. And then you have the three, you know, big price horses in Jasper's Pride 30-1, and Just Step On at 30-1, and Sea Streak 20-1. So that's in terms of the Haskell, the UN, as John Hines said yesterday, he didn't know exactly how many would end up signing on, but the UN came up unbelievable. And even though we're not going to get Jeff Franklin, Jeff's away this week, but I did send out for people, I did send out the UN as one of the two Thoroughgraph races, and you got that, as well as, and I actually kind of was, I typically like to do a turf and a dirt race, but I ended up doing the San Clemente from Del Mar.
For Beat Pick?
Yeah, this is actually, I haven't decided on Beat Pick. I'll decide that this afternoon, this evening. But no, this is for the Thoroughgraph players. And again, you go to thoroughgraph.com and sign up, and you get two free races a week to help you learn how to use the sheets. Anyway, UN, when we talk about it later, Grand Sonata in here out of the Monmouth, Emmanuel for Pletcher as well. Get Smokin' turns up in here, and fresh off of a 7-year-old debut, the veteran Get Stormy for Mark Cassie, and good to see him back for a 7-year-old season. I had missed, really, that he came back in June in the Eclipse and had the lead and then was overhauled by his own stablemate, Palazzi. Adomo for Chad Brown, who dances a lot of dances, and he's coming out of the Monmouth but has run well here. He won this, of course, last year, so Chad with a defending winner. Phil Washington for Shug. I told you Shug was going to be down here. Not him personally, because he's got the things at Saratoga, but Reeve will be here. Magic Caps for Washington coming off the Monmouth dead heat with Running Bee, and they line up together as it happens. Chad's other, and then you got Data Man, the Wertheimer for Graham Motion, who won the cliffhanger here, avoiding the heavy heads. Napal Chatterball shows up with So High. Tawny Port, who continues his rebirth as a turf horse for Chris Clement and John Fort and Peachtree, the pioneer of the Nile 5-year-old, who was converted from Brad Cox dirt horse to Chris Clement turf horse. Web Slinger, who of course is sort of a house horse on the show. Cassie and the Greens. Mike Maker brings Nice Guy Stables Starting Over, who won the McDermida and got a freshening. And then Far Bridge for Clement, who of course moved over from Pletcher and is exiting the Manhattan, and a very solid try in the Manhattan when he was only beaten by the Godolphin duo. So a terrific, terrific United Nations.
So the United Nations is running as a grade two this year. Got downgraded in December. And I always say that when a race gets downgraded, usually they get 1 year to get back. And it's not a rule, but if you don't rebound immediately, the race just
gets harder.
Just tanks. It's just the way it is. I've just seen it too many times. And I'm so thrilled to see this 12-horse field was loaded with graded stake winners. And, you know, a lot of these races that we see, they're small. They're fives or sixes. And I'm hoping that this is a good rebound race and that the, you know, we'll see what it does, but it'd be nice to see this race get back and get grade one status again.
It has a presence in American racing history as really the first turf stake that the turf racing in the U.S. grew out of. And, of course, Round Table's success, and Round Table, the first great American turf horse, but the United Nations was an absolute linchpin to turf racing becoming, you know, what it's become. This is the race that really got turf that created interest in
this
turf
race and the DC International.
It came a little later, as a fall, as a fall counterpart.
Right, it was a spot to run in the fall, and I think you know, a lot of champions ended up running there. But this one especially, but that one also just was a good late year ender, and when turf wasn't as popular as it was today. But
not to get on the exit ramp and dive into graded stake conversation. But there is a portion of this that's notable, right? You've got Adomo, who won it in 22, right?
Yes. And so just to point this out, he won it 22, but more importantly, he won it on July 23rd, and we're running it July 20th, which means you get 2 years for that. So that race will count as having a grade one winner. If this race today was run on the 24th, it would be over 2 years, and you wouldn't get that credit for that grade one winner in the race.
Really?
You get 2 years back. Yeah.
So
you have to draw the line
somewhere. So the runnings, wouldn't just the runnings count?
No.
If you
win a grade one race at three, okay, and then you run in a race as an eight-year-old, that grade one that when you ran 5 years ago is not going to count. This just makes sense. You can't go back forever.
No,
when we go back and look at points for this any race, you get 2 years on either side of the race for it to count. So that was the first thing I looked at when I said you said that. I went 23rd. Well, oh, it's the 20th. So right. So it'll fall in the bucket.
All right. Well, so there's a little Toba inside baseball for people that are curious because this, no matter how many times, Rick, that we explain it or I tell people to go and go to Toba's website and read all the details about the graded stakes operation and how it works. They still, it's still confusing.
There's a lot of things, but that's, like I said, you have to draw the line somewhere, and I think 2 years is fair for, horse to be, still, viable to count.
All right. The rest of the slate, of course, the matchmaker, and this race actually benefited from the off the turf yesterday because Will Walden shifted Olivia Miralda, who was going to run an allowance yesterday, shifts Olivia Miralda down here. And Chad's got Delahaye and coming off the Mint Julep win, Papilio for Team Cassie. who righted the ship with an allowance win. Surprisingly for Todd, a good try in the New York against some heavy heads. Mammon June for Chad out of the Eatontown. Sacred Wish for George Weaver, who ran in it as well. And the nice Jenny Wiley winner, Beauty Cachet. This is a mile and an eighth, though, as opposed to a mile. The Molly Pitcher, you heard both from Brad Cox and from John Himes. Idiomatic, and they rounded up a field of six others to face off.
No, it's not a walkover by any means. I mean, I was looking at it yesterday quickly on the plane. Now you're 100% right.
Yeah, and of course, randomized turned her away in the FIPS. So comes back here. She's preparing for the personal ensign in this spot. Misty Vale shows up for Maker out of the Lady Jacqueline win at Thistledown on the Ohio Derby undercard. Soul of an Angel for Safi Joseph, who upset the Ruffian and then tried again in the FIPS and didn't have the same impact. Just Catherine, Jose Jimenez, and Frosty O'Toole for Mike Denny, the always dangerous Mike Denny, and Kathleen O. And you remember we talked to Suge, and he tried to pick her head up a little bit with that Serena's Song win, and it worked, and she comes back to run. Those are fairly early on the card, the fifth and the sixth, and there's some allowance action before the Monmouth Cup. The Monmouth Cup features the older males going the mile in the eighth. Stage Raider for Cherie and John Gunther, who had a nice day Sunday in New York. LSU has got Rudy Rod and Kuchar in here. Highland Falls for Brad out of the Blame Win. Counter Spy, Bob Mosco. Cozieris, and you know, I asked you, we were talking about prospective people to bring in today. Terry Pompey, who has been an institution here forever, right? I mean, she's been in Monmouth in the summer for
she's been here a long time. Yes.
Surface to Air for Panagiotis Sinfius, and Premier Stable out of a nice allowance win, and gives Jose Gomez a chance in a graded stake. Far Mo Power, Lou Lindner as well. And Tappet Trice, who, of course, has not been seen since the Travers. So he starts his three-year-old season here in Jersey. And he actually ran in the Haskell last year and really disappointed, a little under 5-1. So there's most of the action. Where's the Wolf Power? I know it's in here somewhere. I got the Wolf Power somewhere.
Wolf Hill. Don't.
Wolf Hill. Excuse
Wolf
me.
Hill. It used to be right up there. Wolf Hill. It's not even there anymore.
No. Golden Brown from Pat McBurney.
Yeah.
I love it. Now 8 or 9 years old. I love it. Trombetta brings in Arzak, who terrific turf sprinter. Ned Allard, who's come up once from Delaware, twice from Delaware, and got a win. Interesting. That's right. Brittany Russell, Eamon for Joe Orsino. Nice group. This is a nice group.
It is a nice group.
Jose Duarte, nothing better for Rich Santulli. Let My People Go, Vicky Oliver. And Davey Jacobson comes down with a horse. He's got with M&M. And, of course, they M&M yesterday, a little score yesterday.
You did?
Yeah. It's kind of funny, actually. At Saratoga, with the DePaula play of the day, after the races came off the turf, I had to come up with a different play. And my second choice, as it was, for the play of the day was in the seventh. Was it Deck? Not Deck the Cards. Something the Cards. What was it? And 6-1 morning line looked like speed, you know, wet track off and on, you know, various degrees. Wires the field, romps, and went up.
And the odds didn't go down.
Went up to crazy, went up, paid 20.80.
Very nice.
So I was quite pleased yesterday, and I hope I hope everybody took advantage. Deck of cards, not
deck of cards.
Deck of cards.
I wanted to say one quick thing. You mentioned the Matchmaker Stakes, which we said came from
Atlantic City
many years ago, and I don't know who came up with the idea, but it's kind of a cool race where you see WinStar's sponsoring as the WinStar Matchmaker, and so what they do is they name Nashville, Global Campaign, and Two Fills, which are three of the stallions that they stand. So the 1, 2, 3 finishers in here get a free ride. So the winner gets to pick which stallion they want to send their mare to, and the second and third. So that tradition's carried on all the way here. I think that's kind of a cool little deal, and I'm glad to see that carried on. You mentioned the Wolf Hill, and I don't know if that was around. We named that one here, if it was already here, but it could have been. But Wolf Hill used to be across the street. It was the reading room, the mansion, whatever you want to call it. This really classy building with one of the guys here, which I'll talk about in a minute. His family ran it, and so for the summer, when trainers would come in and owners would come in, if they were lucky and we really needed them, Rick and I stay, and we would put them up at Wolf Hill. And during the, I don't know, after I left here in the last, like, I think about 15 years ago, they sold the property. And I think at once it was the goal was to maybe turn into a library for Oceanport, and out of that went awry, and now it's gone. And it was just, I had my wedding reception up there, too. So let me get some pictures. But it's just this really cool building that's gone. And if you come off Portapec, I think Road is the name of the road there, and you drive up, it still has the two little cement pillars on the side that you drive up. The road, the windy road, is still there, but the building is gone. So no more mansion on the hill there, but it was just kind of added to the mystique of Monmouth Park. Back in the day. So, but a great name and a good race. So, you forget all the history back here. You forget, I grew up in California. History is 1920 back there. And you see something that's, 30, 40, 50 years old is history. Here, we go back into the 18s and in the 1700s and even the 1600s, a couple of cemeteries over in Shrewsbury that I know. But, so I always, I love it back here just because of that, too.
No doubt. No doubt. Before we dig in on a few other things, let's get a first glance. I don't know if you print. Did you print Del Mar at all?
No, because the wonderful, fine established inn that I'm staying at does not have a business center. In other words, a printer, so I did not print the PPs. But you mentioned the change. For years and years and years, the ocean, and I still have to think about it because I always call it the ocean port, but it's the ocean side. Was the only stake of the day. And for, 25, 30 straight years, we split it, sometimes twice, sometimes three ways, but not anymore. But they added, with the late start of the meet, and they don't start till the 20th, and I have to think that that's got to be one of the latest starts for Del Mar in ever. And it had to do with the fair, and they run a fair down there, and they couldn't get the track open until actually a few days ago. But anyway, they started on the 20th on Saturday. I don't remember ever starting on a Saturday either, but that's neither here nor there. But because of the consolidation, they had to get the prep in for the Del Mar Oaks in, and so why not run an opening day? It's a Saturday, and it's a big day. So and that race is always very popular, as it's shown in this running.
Well, the Oceanside at least is the first stake. That's the positive. And we say this all the time. These restricted stakes, non-winners of a sweepstakes or non-winners of a graded stake, that's how they run them, of a graded sweepstakes. That's how, like, the Curlin is restricted, for instance. But the De La Rose, they do that, and the Lure, and it always brings an eclectic, fun field, and certainly the case. A lot of times, it's either horses that have just been nibbling in stakes and haven't won, or very frequently, too, you get horses that have had a delayed start to their season, and they come back, and these are very, frequently three-year-old restricted as well. But you get a horse, maybe it's their second start of the year, and they were a stake horse last year.
Right.
So it they're always competitive and fun and great betting opportunities.
It's funny because it's not funny, ha-ha. Earlier in the year, if a guy would win $100,000 stake, it'd be great. But he's like, "Oh, I can't go on the Oceanside now." You know, he'd be a little upset. So it's actually the conditions read non-winners of a sweepstakes of 50,000 a mile or over in 2024, and that 50,000 means to the winner. You have to tell you if you win more than 50,000 in the race, you are ineligible. But like you said, some of those restricted races come up good, and this race. Oh, I don't know. If you had to pick one race on the California state calendar that you know is going to come up good every year, it's definitely this one.
Well, what's notable? I mean, look for instance at King of Gosford for Phil D'Amato, and this horse since coming to North America has won three straight races. Two of them down the hill, and the Desert Code and the John Shear, and an allowance race. So here's a horse who's already a multiple stake winner in North America, but just so happens they're not graded. Beyond that, how about McCarthy with We're in Trouble, who's 2-for-2. Here's a horse coming forward. McCarthy also offers Blue-Eyed George. Sadler coming out of the Affirmed and bringing Scatify, the West Point Justify colt, back to the grass. And this is a graded stake placed type. On and on. First time North America, Dan Blacker. Simplexity. An Invincible Army gelding. Last seen at Dundalk last fall. A little bit of everything involved here. McCarthy actually has got a third formidable man as well for the Warrants. Second in the American Turf at Churchill. So you get horses that are plenty accomplished, but they just haven't happened to have won a graded stake yet. So the Oceanside, the first stake. Then there's a Maiden Affair going six. This is the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. But Miramati will try again to break his maiden after the trip to Pimlico. And Baffert shows up there. You got some firsters that have taken a while to get to the races. Glatt has got a Matoli, Wayne the Brain. And from Muirhut and Glatt also have Santorina, who's had four tries and has run great in every race, and he's run into monsters over and over. He ran into Vlahos in his debut, Ball Don't Lie in his second start, Parenting in his third start, and then Eagle's Flight most recently in May. This is a horse that would have broken his maiden almost any place else against any other group, and here he is. He's 0-for-4. It's funny how this happens. Well, look at the horse. The other day of Pletcher and Rapoli, the one that ran in the Belmont that is a maiden, and he's he's like 0-for-7 now, not profitable, it's just funny how you this can happen.
He should be tough in this one, right?
Well, you say that over and over again, and then there's always some other.
Miramati will explode, right?
Well, you got Angier actually, Pegram Watson and Whiteman, good magic for Baffert. That was a 450 purchase and ran okay at 6-1 in the debut. Simon Callahan has got a Redham purchase called Chipper Me Timbers, Blacker with two firsters, Spearfish. A flatter that actually, with the major Tampa Bay connections, bred by Stella Fair and Lev Miller. How about that?
That's pretty wild.
That's pretty fun. The Williamson team has got not a cowbred, but Brave Blend in Omaha Beach. So this looks like a nice group. There's also Baffert's got another one, Dagger Ranch for the Earnhardts. This is a homebred of theirs out of their wonderful Indian Blessing, and
did you mention the Matoli,
yeah,
the other Mark's other one, Wayne the Brain? Now I don't know if it's the same way in the brain, but there was an agent in up in Golden Gate area that was coined Wayne the Brain. Well, so
Maybe it is.
Used to be Ron Hansen's agent.
You would think, right? Look at our man.
Now you got Delmar.
Tom Lucci printed out Delmar PPs for Hammer, which was
quickly
very nice.
Trying to do the old iPad shuffle here with that, but that's great. And then you mentioned like the San Clemente as well.
San Clemente is your graded feature as well. The 1 mile for the older for the well three and ups.
So I think
no, is it three or three and ups? No, it is 3 year old.
It's I think that's the prep for the Delmar Oaks.
Yeah, there you go.
It used to run on the first Saturday anyway, I think, because Delmar used to open up on Wednesday, and then it was Thursday, and now it's Saturday, so they just kind of kept that there. But kind of wild. So they've had a break. They didn't run last week at Los Al, and it should just as we talked to Andy Harrington last week at Santa Anita, it should really kickstart that meet. So they'll go Saturday, Sunday, and then they'll come back and do the 4 days, 4 days a week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But like I said, nothing better than a little break, especially when you run year-round in a circuit. New York will find that out, and I hope they learn to take some breaks when they get the 10 months at 10 and 2, Belmont and Saratoga. That somewhere in there, you got to take a break or two.
Well, they've done a little bit of a spread around Christmas. That's become, but they've got to run. They've got the legislature. They're prescribed to run X days.
Right.
It's kind of sort of like what the situation is in Virginia. And we should mention it is week two at Colonial, and I have not seen if there's. I don't think we've got any weather issues impacting down there. And for those of you that were wondering, everything's fine for grass in New York. No problem at all at Saratoga after yesterday. And it's actually a very fun card. I'm done. I've got to put in a few more. I got to fill in the blanks. I've had trouble with the laptop with the trackpad getting.
So time for another. I know
it might be.
I've been looking.
This is got
actually,
some miles.
I actually went to go get an iPad Mini because I just need the thing, and the guy goes, "What are you using it for?" I said, "Just Mini." He goes, "Well, get just go. This is cheaper than a Mini." I said,
"What?
It's just a regular size, and it weighs about as much as this pen." And I quickly needed a case. I got this. This case will be we'll hit the trash as soon as I get home. I get another. It was terrible. But like a regular iPad was like $325, and a mini they told me was like $450. I said, "Give me the one. This thing's been great." Of course, I had my last iPad was circa 1980 or something when they first came out. So this is fantastic. Anyway, these things do break down. Eventually, right?
Exactly. I will mention that they, as you heard yesterday, after the turf was scuttled, the Smithwick was brought back and was carded, as we learned yesterday live, and they just redrew and basically reshuffled the deck, and the same seven, Wes Newton, Freddie Flincher, Going Country, Ziggle Pops, Aban, Pick a Number, the import for Leslie Young, and L'Imperator. So the Smithwick will kick off Sunday's card at Saratoga. By the way, speaking of Saratoga, I was sort of shocked to look up earlier this morning, striding through the door, Dan Illman and Mike Beer. And, of course, we talked to Illman on Friday and handicapped with him, and I said, the Beer, I said, you guys, because Marcus Hirsch is wandering around. We'll talk to Marcus tomorrow. And I said, you staying for the race? And he said, no, I'm going back to Saratoga, like right after we tape our beer actually, that's how dedicated these guys are from the forum. Beer drove down from Saratoga, and now he'll turn around after they tape today around noon. He'll get back in the car.
They wanted to be on site. They could have put the phony blue screen or green screen over back there.
Exactly.
That's good.
So there's a chance we'll get a couple of minutes with Illman and Beer, which we enjoy immensely.
Exactly.
So watch for that. You've got Derek Ryan, right?
He told me when he got back over, they just finished. The track closes at 10, right? Yeah, so he's probably finishing up. He said when he came back over, he would give me a buzz or send me a text or something. We talked to him. He's a character. He's great. And we'll line up him and whoever else we want to get. I was looking at some of the notes here. If I can, I'd like to mention one thing that we're here since we're at Monmouth Park. One of the, we'll just do quick, but one of the guys that he was here in the office for many, many years, was part of the crew, had just passed away. John Perlow, that worked at Monmouth Park for, I think, 25 years or so in the racing office, just got word last week that he passed away, so I really wanted to just acknowledge that. He was not only part of our crew here that started up things off here, that went hard and played hard, but loved the game. And he was the king of the lunches, and he taught me well as far as guess what? When somebody wins a race, or you know, you hit the agent up and you make sure that they buy lunch for the office the next day. And so he was very good at that, and I took that out to Del Mar in California out there, and I started the lunch brigade out there. But anyway, just wanted to acknowledge John Perlow.
Nice. I appreciate it. Got a chance to catch up with Joe Clancy, who has arrived. Speaking of traveling to Saratoga, I guess Joe had his fill during the Belmont festival session. Highly unusual for you, right, to have a late arrival.
Yeah, very highly unusual, but as happens sometimes, I felt like I was behind schedule and trying to get organized for the first edition of the Saratoga special during the Saratoga meet, and I could either get further behind schedule by packing up my car and driving 5 hours north, or I could stay home and stay home and try to catch up and do the first two papers from there, which is what I did. And it actually worked out okay.
Well, and of course, the week started off a little damp, if it's only going to happen like that, I think we could be all right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, the weather impacts everything. I've tried to set it aside. It's not something you can worry about or fret about as horse trainers try to tell me it's what it's going to be. I spent the first week down at Fair Hill. I bumped into a couple of cool stories down there. Costa Creed was his first stop after retirement, so I went to go see him and got to write a column about him and his impact on Saratoga, which was fun. Talked to Lee for a while. Saw some Grand Motion horses train and some other Fair Hill horses that were headed to Saratoga train. So it wasn't all hopeless. And then the weather's glorious now. If you want the weather report now, looks great. So we had a little rain, rained out the jump race the first time, but they could put it back on for Sunday. And looks like we're in the clear, hopefully.
Well, I just ran it down, and that's one of the reasons. In fact, I said it's Thursday. I got to let me grab Joe Clancy and get some early impressions. The field with the horses that traveled up, the field stays intact, and all they basically did was reshuffle the deck. Meanwhile, Joe, there's also the three races today again at Colonial, which people I think we got to keep building the awareness for this week to week.
Yeah, I haven't looked at that at all. You should have called me last week. You know, we had a lead pipe cinch, and Todd Bryant got it done for us last week at Colonial. So I don't know if I can be quite so confident because I'm not sure who's running this week. I switched to Saratoga mode.
No, I hear you. In fact, I've got to check if our man Tom Herman Tom did nicely last week too, and I don't know if he's, I don't think he's posted yet. As soon as he posts, he's actually running out of racetrack. I don't see. All right. Joe, any thoughts about Sunday then? A Smithwick glance?
Yeah, I think Aban is going to be very tough to get past in this horse. I know Empire's working back in there very well, and he's improved, but Aban has beaten twice. And just watching those Aban races that he wins for Bernie Dalton, reaching, he kind of just shifts gears and he opens up three or four lengths, and Bernie says, I've never gotten to the last year, and he's crossing the finish line, grabbing the horse's ear and patting him on the neck and looking for competition. So you got to figure there's more there. I think the only concern, if you're at the time or get a chance to watch, is how Aban is handling kind of the pre-race stuff. He was evidently a handful in the paddock and things when he was with Todd Pletcher. Bernie and Kate have seemed to have solved that issue, but running at some of the steeplechase meets where they're allowed to tack up at the barn and walk over and it's a little, calmer atmosphere than he's going to get here on Sunday for sure.
Well, what do you know about the import, about pick a number?
Tactics-wise, looks like he is prominent and looks like the horse is going to be in front early, and whether he can, I think that'll be interesting. That puts him in the race. I mean, some of these Europeans come over with a different kind of running style, and they can't kind of get into an American race necessarily. He's going to be in the race, and I think he's going to be up front, if not in front, early. That probably helps the two main contenders between Aban and Imperator. They probably both want pace to kind of settle in behind and make runs. But that horse is certainly, he rose right up the ranks in England and comes over for, the Lucas Fork and this young team, they bring over nice horses. So he certainly got to be respected.
The Hammer just pointed out some of his early exploits going back to late in 22 and early 23, where he was 150-1, 200-1.
I've never seen that before. Is that
crazy, right?
Yeah.
He's running the ship lately. He won four of his last five. Yep. And went right up there, kind of handicap ladder. And if he's doing it on... he's done it on heavy ground, he's done it on good ground, so I guess maybe the ground doesn't matter, he's an interesting prospect for sure, and you got to respect, the horses they bring over. That being said, they've got nice horses in the barn. Aban beat High Definition from that barn, he beat the Hero Next Door from that barn, Imperial beat Grand Party Plan from the barn, and so now they're coming in with another one, so it should be interesting. I love that the two favorites, Aban and Imperator, have American platform. I think that's nice to see that translate. It always has, and American jump race has gone so English and Irish heavy lately. But to see horses with that, back American platform convert and find success at it is good for the game, really.
Right, and I'm sort of intrigued by pick a number and the way he's traversed the countryside, first in Ireland and then in Britain, and debuted at Tremor, then Ferry House. He ran in April last year at Kilbeggan, and which is not far from the Clancy Tavern, but the show barn. John Pallotta took me past the team, and we drove to Kilbeggan, and I've got pictures of the. You can't even really call it a. It's just sort of a big countryside, kind of a natural amphitheater. A little like Far Hills, a little like Percy Warner, and so I've been to Kilbeggan. I got a big kick out of that. But then Roscommon, Ballinrobe, Wexford, and then earlier this year, Catterick, Lingfield, Bangor-on-Dee, Huntingdon, and Haydock.
I mean, this horse has run 14 times at 13 different race courses.
That is very English or Irish form, right? That's the way it goes. And again, I think that's obviously a nice horse. He's traveled where they've taken him. You know, he did all his running there, you know, and ran different places, managed to produce. And, obviously it took him a little while, but he's in really good form. And, I just think the class. We know the class of Avon because we've seen it, and Leparator because we've seen it. And not having seen this horse run, he's stepping into a pretty against two pretty nice horses, I would think.
You know, just to give you an idea, if you realize this, it's 12 kilometers from Tullamore to Kilbeggan. I mean, it literally. The place everybody goes, I guess, is to your family's bar, after a day at the races.
You could stumble there 12 kilometers.
You could, 12 kilometers, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, less than seven, basically 7 miles, and you can make your way to, what is it? I'm forgetting the name, Joe.
Joe Lee's Pub.
Joe Lee's Pub.
In Tullamore, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Too funny. That's Kilbeggan.
There'll be some Clancy cousins here at Saratoga on Sunday. Too.
No.
They're American Clancy.
Oh, no. We don't care about those.
But they're related to them. They're related to those the ones over there in Tullamore. But they're coming to the races on Sunday.
We're more interested in the Irish. The Irish Clancy.
Right.
American Clancy's are a dime a dozen. Too funny.
So, Joey, I got a call from Sean about a couple weeks ago. I don't know if he mentioned to you. Anyway, so somehow or another, he heard that I was going to be on some panel. Actually, Steve's going to moderate it at the National HBPA, called The Art of Classifying and Filling Races. And we had a great talk. I think we talked for like an hour. I think I want to hire him as our marketing manager, but he was interested. we were going over some stuff. We had some good stuff talking, because we're looking at doing some kind of a rating thing finally for the Thoroughbreds. And he'd mentioned you're on the rating committee for the steeplechase, and so you might be getting a phone call or two once we get rolling later on in the year. But he was funny because he goes, the biggest problem is, and we were laughing, he says, the racing offices go, oh, those trainers never enter, and the trainers always go, there's never a race for my horse, right? It's that conundrum, that goes around, and there's a little bit of truth in both of that, and just, going through just how things have changed and how important it is for both sides to have the race that you're pointing for in 10 days have a go, on your side for the horsemen, and because of it, that race that you've been, pointing for, feed-wise, medication-wise, everything-wise, if it doesn't go, it throws the whole thing off, training throws it off. And we've seemed to have gotten into the mode of more extras rather than less extras, and more choices is never good. And we had a real good talk about it, and we're very much on the same page, and we're hoping that somehow we can get some kind of ratings thing going for Thoroughbreds that'll complement the claiming game and maybe eliminate some of these conditioned races that are out there, and make the choices smaller. I always thought that, when I was a racing secretary, my idea was to not make you think about where you're going. You open up the book and go, I'm going to this race, not am I going to go here, 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 or here. It's to eliminate choices and try to make those races in the book go. So it was a good thing, and like I said, with your experience doing ratings, and I was going to talk to Bill as well, but I might be giving you a call in the future here to guide us along.
I'd be happy to talk about it. We kind of got talking about it here just because there weren't that many claiming races in jump racing, and there are still only a few now, and there's not that much. The claiming side of it wasn't that active. The idea of creating a handicap system the way they these horses that come over from England and Ireland are already in, you know, and I like it. I think it's helped. There are times when trainers get frustrated with it, but you know, I think that's always going to be. They seem to have they want you to have a lower opinion of their horse than you have, I guess, put it that way. And they want you to have a higher opinion of the other guy's horse all the time. But by and large, I think it's work, and it's created some races. It does, like you said, here's the race, here's the list of horses that are eligible. It will occasionally put pressure on limits. I wish the steeplechase conditions had a little more flexibility. They kind of put out their condition books early, and because everybody ships, it's a much different type of scenario. So the conditions are out months and months ahead of time, but by the end, a few months in, I think some flexibility to adjust some of the race conditions to the horse inventory is helpful. To me, that's just for adjusting numbers, type of thing. Say, okay, this race that we thought we wanted to be a 120, say, it really needs to be a 118 or something like that, for lack of, that's the simplest way to put it. But I think by and large, it's been a good thing, and it certainly answered, and flat racing, it would help answer some, in my mind, horse welfare or horse care type of thing too. You say, look, the claiming game kind of just, rightly or wrongly, creates some irresponsibility, where, well, it's not my horse anymore, he got claimed, and in a handicap system, he's your horse, and I think that's important to tell the public.
Well, especially now, as we're more cognizant of things that, could possibly contribute to, horses, going bad. If they stay in the one stable longer, it's probably better for the horse instead of being, claimed and moved along. And we're still going to have the claiming game. They're not eliminating that, but in the ranking system, obviously, if you're in a group, you can continually to run with your friends, and the benefit of that too is nobody's dropping down. You can't if you're a 60 horse, there's not going to be an 80 horse dropping down into your rankings, and so. Theoretically you'll run more often because you'll be more competitive and on down the road. So, but anyway, we're in the early beginnings, but I can see already you have some ideas that we'll probably be looking to talk to you about. So I appreciate that. But yeah, it was funny.
Great. No, I'll be happy to. I think it's got some upside for sure.
Yeah.
Especially when you look at the way international jurisdictions do it and make it work,
It's been a topic that that's been on the back burner or being kind of massaged around behind the scenes.
It's
for a while.
It's the little, what is the little red engine that could? It just kept going up the hill and down. And it's been 4 or 5 years. I know Sal Sinatra talked about it, the round table. Gosh, 4 or 5 years ago, I wrote some article over for the Thoroughbred Idea Foundation about it, and it's been pushed and pushed and then backed away. Well, I think we're finally, getting close here. There's a couple of meetings going to happen in Saratoga in the next, within the next month, and if we get the stamp of approval from certain groups, we've had tracks that are very interested and have already, said, well, we'll be a guinea pig, we'll do it. So, hopefully by, maybe the first quarter of next year, we'll be putting some races in books and trying it out. So, look, there hasn't been a new race in thoroughbred racing in 100 years. We keep grinding the same thing. So, we'll take a long, long, long look at it. It's going to be a lot of quality control heading into it, and if it looks like it's going to be worthy, we'll give it a shot. So, got to keep moving. Can't keep doing the same thing, right?
Well, in an environment, that is kind of demanding fresh thinking from a lot of different, a lot of different perspectives. It's really, Joe, as a backdrop, Del Mar opening Saturday and Saratoga well underway. Here we are at Monmouth, which dates to 1870. There's the history of the game, but then there's, the demands of the current marketplace and landscape. In fact, Eric Hamelbeck's going to join us next, and we've made reference to next week's National HBPA convention will be at Prairie Meadows next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you know, new ideas and you know, the horsemen are resistant to change in a lot of cases, but we certainly have got the right. It feels like we've got, you know, the right atmosphere to affect change, because people are acknowledged for the first time, you know, that for the game to grow and for the game to, you know, continue. There's certain, you know, certain exterior pressures, and then there's economic realities that are at play here.
Yeah, totally. And you've seen it already. You know, just, I mean, those auction maiden races, they're very popular, and they haven't been here that long, you know. And I'm sure at the beginning that was like, that'll never work, you know, like everything in horse racing. And they've worked, and they've been good opportunities for people.
Yeah, we started that, I'm going to say about 10 years ago in California, say 8 to 10 years ago. And, right, very sample. Oh, everyone's very skeptical. How are you going to control that? It's very easy. Just look up the horse's sale price.
Yeah.
It's not that tough. And, you know, obviously, there was an idea was to, you know, give that guy that, you know, wasn't spending, you know, millions of dollars on horses, but had a nice horse, and he didn't have to run against the heavy heads every single time. And,
yeah.
And you know, why wouldn't you? And yeah, it gets a little. It's funny because when you look in the PPs, it has the little R by, which means restricted, and you know, not necessarily are they. Doesn't mean that they're not nice horses.
Yeah, they're not slackers necessarily.
Yeah.
They just
sold for 80 instead of, you know, 780. That's all.
800.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, and because I remember this. So the first time we did it, right. I can't think of the horse's name, but so we do this, and this is great. Everyone's all happy. And so who wins the first one that we did? Bob Baffert.
He had
it's like everybody's going, oh, you got to be. He had a Calbert or something, and he dipped in there, and he paid like 64 something. He won. Everyone's like, oh, you got to be kidding. We can't get it. You want another one. But it was pretty funny. But you didn't have too many of those. But I'll forget the horse's name. I'll come up with it later. But,
right. But
you know, the idea being that, you know, let's give everybody a chance to. I could go on and on about my maiden, what I would love to do with maidens, but. We'll make one of these days. We'll go into that.
No, I always wanted to see a race, you know, just an almost open race, but say for horses who've never run a speed figure above whatever this number you pick, you know. So
yeah.
They've never run an equibase speed figure above 82. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, because let's face it, the more maidens that win, I mean, the more maidens that win that move on to become winners. So you know, and. Real quickly, I would love to. I always give this to the horsemen. If you had $1 million to spend on maiden races, would you rather have 10 races at 100 or 20 at 50? And if men, of course, they go, oh, the 100. And I'm going, you're missing the point. You know, you know, we always seem to ask, well, what's the maiden special? What's the maiden special? To see where you fit into the scheme of things. It's like, have one race that the purse really doesn't need it, it's a maiden race, because that's one race every horse has to run in. So the pot doesn't have to be, you just paid $1 million for a horse, you think you care if the purse is 50, 60, 80, 100? No, it's the opportunity, right?
Well, that's been proven.
Yeah.
That's certainly proven during the winters in Florida, where certain horsemen would rather send their horses to Tampa on the grass, most notably.
Right.
They would rather run on the turf at Tampa for what? For 38,000,
42,000. Because they just want to break their maiden.
Exactly.
So you don't need to spend the money so much.
Yep.
So I would like to give away less in the maiden races and cap them at 8 or 9 horses a race. Okay? So let these horses win. So we don't need 12, 14 horse maiden races where, you know, the horse beats 8 horses and he finishes 5th. I mean, it's ridiculous. I just lower the purse, run more of them, cap them at 8 or 9, and except maybe the, you know, a big day or something like that. But I'd rather have just run 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, run more of them, and at the end of the year, you got 200 more maidens in the country.
And suddenly
the allowance races go and everything else. We don't need, and like I said, we don't need these horses running in these big fields as maidens, getting their heads kicked in, and then, you know, they just it just doesn't happen. Let these
horses. That should be the easiest race to win.
That should be the, no, it should be. Let them win. Let these guys go. Let them win. And so anyway, that's been, you know, I could never talk the horse group into that. They just more purses. No, less purse, more races, more winners. Anyway.
Well, it that also would sit well with, frankly, with ownership base, especially in an era, you know, where we're bringing people into the game through partnerships. You know, getting that photo is, you know, it means more than anything.
No, I'm talking the eight. I'm talking about basically on the dirt. I'm talking about those horses. Turf is a different game. But anyway, let those horses, you know, earn some money by if they're okay. So anyway, that's I've been tooting that for a long time, but it never got much traction. I don't know. Just like I said, the theory is, at the end of the year, if you have so many more winners to move on, then it makes those races, you know, much better.
Definitely. So,
there's my guy. I ended up getting my spiel.
No, this was good. It was fabulous.
You get on the soapbox. That's what happens.
You got it right.
I feel you.
Joe, looking ahead to the weekend and to the rest of the season. Now that you're here. What's on your radar screen?
Well, hopefully we get to have a jump race on Sunday. You know,
right.
I'm tired of previewing the bond races that don't actually get to run, you know. So, but then it's just, I mean, like always, we're trying to, you know, trying to bring people Saratoga in a little different way. You know, go find stories that other publications don't have. Nothing against them. You know, we do it a little differently, you know, so. The idea is to try to go find stories, talk to people, meet horses that you know, readers appreciate, and that you don't get everywhere else. Put it that way, and you know, appeal to everybody from horsemen to fans in the backyard picnic tables.
Well, of course, the stars come out on a regular basis, and Torpedo Anna. In the Oaks on Saturday, and very similar scenario actually here with the Molly Pitcher, when it comes to, I'm just reaching for my Saratoga pages, the horses that they rounded up to face Herb, they're within hailing frequency, and Idiomatic here. She's got some authentic competition. So probably the biggest older filly and mare star and the 3-year-old filly star, both featured on Saturday at Monmouth and at Saratoga.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Tom Law was up early this morning to go see Torpedo Anna and Kenny McPeak, and he's handling the preview there. And she's special, right? I mean, that acorn was something. The Kentucky Oaks, everything she's done has been that good. And it'll be, like you said, she's gonna have to work, you know. I think it'll be interesting. And it's always, I mean, Saratoga and even a race like that at Monmouth, you know, people want to run. They're races people want to win. So they're going to be, you know, they're not easy spots. They're not supposed to be.
No.
Is this a Travers prep for her?
Apparently, because Mystic Dan.
Leaving that alone.
Well, no. I think Kenny's much more open to the conversation and the suggestion than he was, because he knows specifically that Mystic Dan's not going to be there. So,
right. But I think he and any trainer would be like, look, is she up to it? You know, don't make the decision because another horse suddenly isn't there. But, you know,
exactly.
Is she up to it? You know, and obviously we'll learn a little more on Saturday, and, you know, and then probably watching the other, the Colts run in the various preps too, to kind of get an idea.
She looks like a monster, doesn't she?
Yeah, she hasn't done anything wrong. That's for sure. She's fun to watch.
She does. Joe,
and there's another one. She ran in a restricted auction maiden to get her career going.
How about that?
Perfect. Point well made.
Right?
Thank you. I love that.
She was 4-1. Look at that. You know.
Did she win?
Yeah, she won.
Yeah, she won. Yeah. Joe, look forward to seeing you. We'll see you later in the weekend, and we'll be checking in with the Saratoga special team. And, of course, even when there are days that the paper doesn't publish, 20 different publishing dates, but online as well. This is horseracing.com, and you can pull down the pull down all the issues, and then the analysis from the team, from Tom and Shapazian and everybody, that's always available on a daily basis too. So,
yeah, no, we've expanded the membership club we have, and there's a little some exclusive content to Reader's Club members, which they can learn about on the website too, which is expanding all the time. So that's good. We're producing stuff all the time. So plenty of things to look for between the publication and the website.
Joe Clancy, everybody. Joe Clancy, 65, Saratoga TL, Tom Law, and by Sean Clancy, the three-headed monster, Clancy, Clancy, and Law. There it is. We will.
Do we cheat him and how?
I love it. Shyster, Shyster, and Flywheel as well.
There you go.
Joe, we'll see you Sunday.
Sounds good.
Joe Clancy, you, everybody. Joe. Always fun. Joe's funny. He's written now. This will be three different previews for a band after he missed the Steinman, and it was canceled, and then Thursday. So now